chances are pretty good that the person or people who are producing the food that you eat are women. Oftentimes, I think we think about men as the farmers and men involved in agriculture, but that has always been not true, to be perfectly honest, and even less true now as we see more and more women involved in agriculture. And we're going to talk about that today with a couple of guests who have a great training program. It's called Inner Boots Training Series. We'll talk about that and also talk about women in agriculture. And I'm really pleased to welcome back to the microphones Lisa Kivrist. Lisa directs the Rural Women's Project. It's a venture of the Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Service. We call it MOSES. It provides resources and support for women farmers and food-based ecopreneurs. She's a national leader for the women farmer movement and will be leading the In Her Boots workshop series this summer. She's also an author and owner of In Serendipity Farm and B&B outside Monroe, and she's been with us a number of times in the past. Lisa, good to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for inviting us.
Janet Gamble has been an educator, organic biodynamic farmer, and pioneer in the sustainable agriculture movement for over 30 years. And she's currently developing a new farm. It's called Turtle Creek Gardens in Delavan, Wisconsin, that area, where she's growing vegetables and fruits for a 100-member CSA. She supplies fruits and vegetables as well to local stores. And Janet Gamble, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Really appreciate having you both here. Maybe those of you who are listening, maybe you are a woman farmer. Were you born into it, or did you pursue it yourself? As a consumer, do you try to support local producers, and if so, why? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us with a question at talk@wpr.org, or you can also post a question on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Any of those ways you can get to us, and we'd love to hear from you. And Lisa, let's start with you. Are there a growing number of women in agriculture?
You bet, Larry. Nationally, according to the last U.S. Ag Census, there was a 30% increase in the number of women-owned and operated farms. And that increase is a real bright spot in our agricultural trends, where we see the decline of farming, the decline of people going into farming and aging farmers. And we see that very much reflected in Wisconsin. There's been over a 58% increase in the number of women-owned farms in the last decade. And that's primarily being driven by ventures like Janet. Small-scale, sustainable, very locally focused operations that are really driven passionately at feeding their local community fresh, healthy, Wisconsin-grown produce and other things throughout the year.
And Janet, I think for some people, the idea of women on the farm is a woman that's married to a male farmer, and so she's a farm wife. And of course, farm wives, if we want to call them farm wives, have done this for forever and carried a very heavy load. But we're talking here about women who are in charge and the sole producer here. A lot of farms run by women.
That's right. Well, I'm a single woman running and operating a farm. And yeah, I think that women have go a little under-recognized, especially those farm wives, as being a very instrumental piece in the farm success. So I can speak on behalf primarily of a single woman operating a farm. And
sure.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about your farm.
Well, this is the second year I've been managing Turtle Creek Gardens. It's a new budding operation in Delavan. And so we're starting from scratch, basically, and it was a corn and soybean farm, farm conventionally, and we've transitioned. It's an 80-acre farm, and some of the land has been transitioned by the neighboring farm is a grass-fed based beef operation, and I took the remaining 6 acres and transitioned it now to an organic piece about 2 years ago. And so we're transitioning that piece and growing the operation and taking back some of the transition land that the grass-fed operation held to support a farm that can support the operators and the managers of that farm.
So we have 6 acres, and you have 100 CSA members, is that correct?
That's correct, pretty close to that. We have probably 120 equivalents, which means that's a combination of our every week shares and our every other week shares.
But it's always interesting to me, Lisa, that on a fairly small acreage, although I know how much work 6 acres, I mean, there's a lot of work for 6 acres, but you're feeding a whole lot of people.
You really can. It's not a question of quantity, it's quality. And Janet's work really reflects that, of it's how we care for the soil and the soil fertility and the soil quality and what it can produce to feed Wisconsin. You see that very much so in these small-scale operations. So you don't need a lot of land, but you need, I think, vision and passion and a commitment to the land stewardship, for sure.
And Janet, you've been a pioneer in this for 30 years?
Yes.
30 years. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, what kinds of changes or what kinds of trends have you seen, not only toward acceptance, but demand?
Oh, my God. Just astronomical changes. Mm-hmm. It's a world of difference, and especially probably in the last, I'd say, 5 years, it's really been a quickening of awareness and support from consumers that really are demanding local food. And I think the economy probably has a little bit to do with that, where we're starting to really look at our natural resources and energy and people really wanting to support, local products in general.
Well, I tell you what, Claire in Herbster has a question for you. If you'd like to join in, by the way, with your questions, the number to call 1-800-642-1234. And let's turn to Claire now in Herbster. Hi, Claire. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I am actually part of the In Her Boots workshop that's happening this summer as part of highlighting women in agriculture. And I live in very far north Wisconsin. If people don't know where Herbster is, it's pretty much on the shore of Lake Superior. So my question for the two panelists, we know each other, but my question is, how are you guys being received in your local communities as women farmers by kind of the established farming community?
Good question. Lisa, let's start with you.
Yeah. Well, community is the key word there, and I think that's a common spirit. Historically, Larry, you were talking earlier about farm wives and the strong roots that women have on Wisconsin farms for generations. The fact that women are growing things is nothing new, but what's great to see is this new movement of starting new ventures, and particularly ventures that are focused on the local food system. So it's very collaborative in spirit, and that makes a huge difference. I know locally in my community around Monroe that we do things very openly and transparently, and we have a lot of open houses. We had one on our farm this past weekend, and potlucks and reasons for kids to come on the farm, and that's a real common spirit amongst women farmers of that educational element. And that, I think, makes a huge difference in community acceptance when you're very willing to share both your bounty, but your mm-hmm. knowledge and all of that. And it's very much a part of the series, as the In Her Boots series, that we're going to be going way up north to Claire's place in August to see.
All right. Janet, comment?
Yeah. I would have to say I haven't felt any barriers at all. Only open-armed reception from neighbors. And I live in a very traditional farming community. So I have been impressed with the support, either people becoming members of the CSA to farmers just being able to contract work out. I mean, these farmers are used to large amounts of acreage, big, huge machines, and everyone's been really helpful in coming to help do some of the heavier equipment work that I don't have the equipment for, to, a neighbor having a tree and compost business, bringing wood chips and compost over to me. And I've felt nothing but support.
I think one strong reason, Larry, it's not just women, it's farmers in general, new farmers are really changing the national scope of agriculture, and it's coming from Wisconsin. We don't always realize that because I think we're good modest cheeseheads here, but the rest of the country is really looking at Wisconsin as the hub of the new sustainability movement. And part of the reason it's so strong here is farmers going into agriculture in Wisconsin respect our roots, and we realize we come from a long heritage of agriculture, and we've always been open to innovation in how we do things. And the fact that the markets are changing, to Janet's point, there's more of a demand for local things. You see farmers growing everything from currants to hops to more traditional perennial crops, and they're trying things because that's what the market's demanding. But you sense a lot of support for that as well. It's definitely not same old all the time. We need that newness.
Claire, has that been your experience?
Yeah, it has. There's just such an amazing community up here in the Shawamigan Bay region, from conventional farmers to consumers, all in support of the things that we're doing, the new farmers who are moving to the area. And I think the older farmers are really seeing this as an opportunity to see the farming traditions passed on and go in some really interesting directions. My farm is focusing on winter production, and it's kind of dangerous to say that because I'm already sold out for the winter in terms of CSA shares. There's just such a demand all the way around. It's really amazing to see.
But Claire is a great example of, again, trying these new things because, no, she's doing winter production about as wintry as you can get in Wisconsin. She's practically farming on the lake up there. And if she can do it...
I like a challenge.
Yeah, you like a challenge, girl. But it's inspiring to the rest of us of how much produce we can grow year-round in Wisconsin.
Oh, that's great. And you grow what for in the winter?
I'm growing salad greens, and then I'm storing root crops that I've grown over the summertime and working with some other farmers to grow those crops. And then I've got processed things. There's local fermented products and jams and pickles and things like that. And then all of that goes into the box. But the people really want the greens in the wintertime, so that's what I'm mainly focusing on. But I've also got an orchard, and so I've got apples and cherries and pears and some nut crops in as well.
It sounds wonderful. And Claire and Janet and Lisa are all great examples of the kind of original thinking and entrepreneurship that can result. And we've got a whole lot more to talk about with them. So you stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Beautiful and delicious seasonal produce is one of life's great pleasures, I think. More and more, we're very conscious of where our food comes from and under what conditions it's grown. If you think about who is growing your food, do you picture a woman farmer? Chances are better and better that that's who's growing your food. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network. My guests are farmers and educators, Lisa Kivrist and Janet Gamble. And they're here for the next half hour to share their experiences and to let us know about how women can get into farming. And if you're a woman farmer, would like to be, what draws you to that livelihood? Love to hear from you or anyone else with a question about women in agriculture. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Back with our guests right after the news. Happy to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking about women involved in agriculture. Women who own and operate farms right here in Wisconsin. Lisa Kivrist, one of our guests. She directs the Rural Women's Project, a venture of the Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Service, or MOSES. She's a national leader for the Women's Farmers Movement. She's also leading the In Her Boots workshop series this summer. We're going to certainly learn a little bit more about that, and has authored a couple of books. She owns In Serendipity Farm and a B&B Outside Monroe. Janet Gamble, our other guest today, educator, organic biodynamic farmer, pioneer in the sustainable agriculture movement for over 30 years. She's currently developing a new farm, Turtle Creek Gardens, in Delavan, Wisconsin. And it's great to have both them along with us today. Certainly hope you'll join in with your questions maybe you're involved in, maybe you're a woman who owns her own operation, or maybe you're thinking about it, interested in it, or maybe you just have some general questions relating to the farm. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. And Lisa, you direct the Rural Women's Project. Maybe you could talk about what that project offers.
Sure. This is a venture of MOSES, the Midwest Organic Sustainable Education Service. And we do specific outreach to help support women farmers and women who run food-based businesses and, bottom line, women who are passionate about transforming our food system. Despite this 30% increase of women farmers I mentioned, there are a growing number, but still a need for support specifically for this group. So we work a lot on educational outreach, like the In Her Boots workshop series, and ways to create a lot of informal networking opportunities. We find that that's a way that women congregate, share information with each other, and support each other's businesses.
Let's talk some more about this In Her Boots workshop series. I see it's going all the way through into September, at least.
Yep, we are real excited. We have 5 workshops scheduled, 4 in Wisconsin and 1 in Minnesota. They're independent, full on-farm day workshops, so you can come to more than one, or you can come to just one, or whatever. They're on women-owned and operated farms, and they're women-led, so it's based on that peer learning idea. And interestingly, there was a study out of UW last year that surveyed women farmers, both dairy and produce in the state, and where they go to for information. And probably not surprisingly to any of us, women farmers go to other farmers. They go to other people for information versus more traditional sources of farm service agency kind of offices. So we want to build on that momentum and create opportunities for that and be able to have some hands-on farm tours and really pick into the brains of folks like Janet, who have this wealth of information, and particularly focusing on women who are interested in getting new ventures started.
And Janet, you're involved in this as well. People will be visiting your farm, am I on?
Well, correct, I'm involved. We're going to be hosting the one in southeastern Wisconsin at the Michael Fields Agricultural Institute. I had formerly been with Michael Fields for 15 years as their education program director, and Turtle Creek Gardens is leasing some land from Michael Fields Agricultural Institute to produce some of the food that we grow for our CSA. So I'll be involved on that particular workshop and touring the gardens behind the institute.
And you had an 80-acre farm. Now you've got about 74 acres that are sort of in beef that someone else is taking care of, and you've got about 6 acres. You just started it last year.
Correct.
How's it going?
Well, it's going quite well, surprisingly. I have to say, we have done our homework. And what I mean by that is part of the success of really raising high-quality products is taking care of the land and really preparing it well. This was a corn and soybean no-till rotation for many years, and so we had to establish adding manures for fertility, cover crops for green manure fertility, building up the nitrogen base, and really coming in with a fertility analysis to and then, you know, I had no idea what kind of crops we were going to produce this year, and we have beautiful crops, and I have to attribute to the work that we have done over the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's setting the tables, or, you know, getting it ready, and then reap the benefits. Lynn in Gays Mills has a question or comment. Hi, Lynn.
Hi there. We are very involved in agriculture. We raise apples in the Gays Mills area, about 200 acres, and we're finding that our customers really are looking for the buy fresh, buy local product. We have a store. All of our items are marked, made in Wisconsin, come from the Midwest, or made in the USA. This is becoming a very big thing for consumers, and they really want to know where their next meal is coming from and who grew it.
Absolutely. And are you selling your apples, all of your apples fresh? Are you making cider? Are you doing other?
We do it all. We do it all. We are Sunrise Orchards in Gays Mills, Wisconsin, and we sell our apples throughout our store door. Plus, they go to many areas of the state with fresh apple cider and our fresh apples. And people really want to know where that product came from.
Yeah, Lisa,
that's
come.
Great. Oh yeah, Lynn, you wonderfully exemplify that diversification of farming today too, in that, yeah, you're producing apples, but you're making cider, you're doing value added, you're agritourism, people are coming to your place, you're helping support the tourism economy in Gays Mills. It's all very integrated and it supports each other, and that's what's important. And it's also, I think importantly, apples are a great example of changing our palate back to that seasonality of eating. I don't want an apple now, but I want one in 2 months and I want to go to Gays Mills to get it and really enjoy it and relish it, because that's when we should be doing that. And we got our other stuff right now, our raspberries, and my zucchini just went into full gear last week. But
yeah, and like I say, new in our store this year is the customer can walk in and next to every product that we sell, it tells them where that product came from. If it was grown here or if it was grown in the Midwest, they don't have to wonder and look on the label. It's just there also knowing that every apple that goes out our door here or goes on the truck to be loaded and goes to the grocery stores throughout the state of Wisconsin, Iowa, and Illinois, that it was locally grown and there was care, put into it before it got on that truck.
Lynn, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This whole business about value added, and that comes home to me in the workshop series that you've put together, Lisa. You know, there's even a pizza operation.
You bet. Yeah. What does pizza have to do with farming? Everything. Especially the first workshop, which will be coming up on July 24th and will be in Brooklyn, Wisconsin, which is the northeast corner of my home county of Greene County, about 30 minutes south of Madison. And that one's going to have a really interesting value-added theme of opening up our ideas of what farming-related businesses can be. And it's going to be at Still Point Farm, and Pamela and Larry Johnson do cut flowers there, and their daughter, Jen Lynch, and her family started La Fortuna Pizza last year based out of Madison. And it's a mobile wood-fired oven pizza. So they literally bring it to the Verona's Market and different events around the Madison area. But they buy all local, from their cheese to their tomatoes to the preserves they use on the pizza. And Claire Stoner Fessenfeld from Quince and Apple that do small batch preserves in Madison will be there, because her preserves appear on the pizza, and it's all very integrated, and they're buying from local farmers. So you don't have to necessarily just start a farm to help support our food system in Wisconsin. There's a variety of new business ideas, and those two women in particular are great examples of that. And you'll eat, well, very good pizza, so come on the 24th to Brooklyn.
And speaking of the interconnections here, I've sold product to Quince and Apple.
No.
So, it just seems like everybody's interconnected somehow, or many of us are. So,
oh,
yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. Sarah in Rushford, Minnesota has a question for you guys, so let's go there. Sarah, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I'm just getting started in my own farm business. I just started going to the farmers markets this year. And I know we're like in the hub of the organic farms area here in the Driftless area, but I'm kind of wondering whether or not I should go with organic certification or not. The land that I'm using was previously used as organic hayland, and I do try to follow organic standards. And I really, my philosophy is to farm sustainably. And I know that I've been through California and I've seen the huge monocrops of organically grown food that isn't necessarily sustainable. You know, whenever you grow one species over many, many, many acres, it's not necessarily the best thing for the environment. There's just a lot of fierce competition among, when people come to the markets, and if you're not certified organic, sometimes they just don't even give you the time of day. So I was just wondering what your guests thought about organic certification and how to try to popularize sustainable farming, which doesn't really have its own certification that I know of, and how to get people to to learn your product. And
Let's turn to Janet first. Janet Gamble?
Okay. Well, yeah, I can speak to that. I think there's a twofold answer to that. One is it's philosophical choice to be organic certified, which really has a standard behind it and can really be a standard that holds up in the marketplace. Number two, it's the marketplace. Is your market demanding that you have that organic certification? In a farmer's market, you may not need that, but if you start selling to certain stores that need the certification paperwork behind it, you may need to go that route so that you could get that premium in the marketplace. I do think that you're in a position in doing farmers markets or selling directly to the consumer to do your education and to really share your farming practices with the customers that you're serving. So I think that that's the beauty of direct marketing, is that you have your story, you have your methodology, and you can use that as your marketing tool to promote your product.
Mm.
Yeah, no, that's a really, really good question, Sarah, because it boils down to trust. And the more we can grow the trust and the relationships between consumers and farmers, the less we need other outside certification, because we know exactly where our food is coming from. Our farm is not organic certified, and it's primarily based on volume because we're small, but we also have that extremely direct connection with people in the sense of we run a bed and breakfast on our farm, so they can see where I'm growing out the window. They can see it come from the garden to the plate, and if they have any questions, I'm the one putting it on their plate, and they can ask me about that and challenge me on it, and I really thrive when people do that. But that's a relationship base of eating that we've gone away from. But for those interested in organic certification, that's a strong role that Moses plays as an organization to help support farmers that want to go through the certification process or transition to organics. And if you go on the Moses website, mosesorganic.org, you'll see a wealth of information on all aspects of that if you're interested in going through the certification process or just farming more sustainably, period.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And there is there's paperwork connected with it, for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's a USDA program. There's paperwork connected with it, which is an issue. I mean, most farmers, want to be out farming than doing paperwork. But to Janet's point, it provides a standard for when you're shopping at, the Woodman's or a larger grocery store, that you know what you're getting is organic, because you can't see the farmer in that situation. When you're at the farmer's market, totally different scenario when you're in a CSA situation as well.
We have an email from Sheila. By the way, before we get to that email, if you'd like to join in, we have some open lines to get you on now pretty quickly with your question by calling 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Now let's turn to this email from Sheila. Is it possible for one to get into the work with the idea of one day owning my own farm if one has no experience, no savings or money to start something up, is middle-aged? Does this require youth who can lift, move, etc., etc.? So that's the first part. And the second part, is there a way to experience the farm life to make sure this is what they want?
Yeah, well, those are really, really important questions. And I'm a glass half full kind of person, so I say yes, yes. But that said, people who are successfully going into farming, I mean, women, men from all backgrounds, to Janet's point, really do their research. And we have a wealth of resources available here in Wisconsin for her to do everything she just talked about. Moses offers a mentoring program where you can have a formal relationship with existing successful farmers and pick their brains. There's the Organic Farming Conference, the largest in the country, to, again, reap a lot of information. But to specific to her question about middle age, that's where the growth of the women farming is coming. It's women in their 40s. People who, I confess, like myself, got into farming with no rural roots or ag background, but, I didn't want to be in a cubicle for the rest of my life, and I didn't want to be in a setting that I had no connection with just for a paycheck. So you see a lot of women going into agriculture and food work because they're passionate about it, and they'll make it work somehow. And you see a lot of creativity, and those are the stories that come out in the In Her Boots workshops and the work I do of how women are creating the livelihoods they envision that they can support themselves sustainably financially and also physically. For example, you see women going into fiber and llamas and more livestock-based than perhaps the more physical aspects of produce growing. And there's different ways, and by asking a lot of questions, you can get a lot of different perspectives on how to have your plan in place.
And Janet, you've been involved for 30 years. How did you get involved? What was your background on that?
Well, that's... I've always wanted to farm. Having grandparents and relatives that were farmers, I just always knew that this is what I wanted to do, and I had gone to school for agriculture, so it went hand in hand with that, and I just stuck with it and, diversified my background in working in the movement and producing, so I could combine those two skill sets to do what I do. And I thought, I was crazy, absolutely crazy, going into a new venture like I have, being at the age I am in vegetable production. So, but I'm doing it, and I love it, and I think it's the frosting on the cake. It's really taking the culmination of my experience and really having, the challenge of my life right now.
Sure.
So, yeah.
And, I think if you think back 30 years when you kind of got started, you probably did not have the kind of resources at all like we've got today through Moses, for example.
Oh, absolutely. There was nothing. I mean, I think there was a few CSA farms at the time that I started my first CSA. So there was no support like that. I just had the support of community, people that I was working with that really, because I believe that I knew what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And I think that it just seemed to attract what I needed to pull me through. So, but now there is just, contrary to what was there and available for me today, Wisconsin has some of the best resources for this sort of thing. I mean, than anywhere else in the country. There's so many sustainable organizations and conferences, workshops, just a myriad of resources out there. You have Michael Fields Agricultural Institute, Moses, Angelic Organic Learning Center, just to name a few. You have the Buy Local, Buy Wisconsin, that and DACAP that offer, producer grants, Yeah. So, I mean, I could go on and on with the resources in Wisconsin.
But I have to go give a plug to Janet here. It's because of women, of farmers like herself who started 30 years ago, 20 years ago, yeah, that we have what we have here in Wisconsin. And we honor and are thankful for that, because it wouldn't be what it is today without people pioneering it decades ago.
Absolutely. Chris in Eau Claire has a comment or question for you. Chris, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
Good. Thanks for having me on. I was volunteering at a CSA a few months ago, and I was talking with the farmer, and she told me, to my surprise, that they were no longer certified organic, and I asked why, and she answered something to the effect that small-scale organic farms have to pay a certain percentage of their sales to be certified organic, but the large-scale organic farms just pay a flat rate. So they end up paying more money to be organic if they're small scale, and that was what, was causing them to no longer be certified. Have you heard of that sort of thing going on and that preventing people from being certified organic?
Well, what I know, this is Janet, what I know of the fees based with certified organic is that if you make under, I think it's $5,000 annually, there is no fee. And anything above that, there's a percentage to pay the certification fees. And that's based on your, your gross income. So I don't think it's waived for bigger growers. I think they pay bigger fees. But I could be mistaken. I'm not real involved in the organic certification. But that's what I know of it.
But the underlying issue, Chris, is things keep changing. And people involved in sustainable agriculture need to, want to, have to keep an activist voice in that and keep connected with, again, groups like MOSES, the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, because these are all rules, regulations, programs that we need to advocate for and understand. And sometimes putting those two together is hard. But it's an important role we need to play. We can't farm in isolation, but we need to be aware and advocate for changes as they need to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for calling. We had a Facebook comment from La Fortuna Pizza. Love the topic. Excited to be part of the first workshop. Value-added businesses like the pizza business and Quince and Apple make buying local easily accessible to a wide range of people. And local buying, whether from farmers or value-added producers, keeps the money local and improves our local economy. Community is the key word, she says, to, you know where your food is from and know who grows it. And I want to, and those are good points, but I want to get back now the Inner Boots workshop series, and these are $20, and that includes a meal. So it's very reasonable, and I want people to know where to go to get more information.
Yeah, the main MOSES website, mosesorganic.org, has information on the In Her Boots workshops and signing up for those, and again, a wealth of other information. MOSES does a range of field days throughout the year on farms throughout the Midwest that folks have access to. The In Her Boots is a specific one targeting women farmers. We were fortunate to get support from a variety of organizations, from the Wisconsin Farmers Union to Organic Valley Family Farms, to, again, keep that price real good. And you can eat a lot of, I can eat a lot of pizza.
And Judith reminds me that the Inner Boots series is also up on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So
fabulous.
Just click on that. And thank you so much, Lisa and Jenna. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, thanks for having us.
And thank you for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.